The Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee will come to order. It's Tuesday, March 13th, 2007, and our agenda has decreased down to three bills. We'll be hearing Senate File 744, Senator Sparks' bill, Senator Higgins' Senate File 816, and my Senate File 1628, which I think I'll start because I think it's, well, without, unless Senator Higgins is here, but I know there, we are probably going to need more people here in any case to vote, but I think we can start with mine because it's pretty straightforward and not very complicated. We are not hearing Senator Pretner Solon's Senate File 608. The parties, remember we heard that last week and I thought they'd be ready today, but they're still working out some kind of language, some kind of an agreement that had to do with the aviation and liability. Senator Berglund withdrew her bill, Senate File 847, having to do with check cashing. And I've withdrawn the bill temporarily on, well, for the day, regulating the business of credit counseling and debt management services. We're working on language and agreement there as well. So we have a shortened agenda, and then I'll discuss what we're going to do Thursday next. If, Senator Sparks, if you'll do this, then chair the meeting, then I'll present.
Thank you. Hey, handsome.
Hey, handsome.
See, you passed my two bills. I better get it. Let's see what the check is.
Yes, please. And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Shy.
Mr. Chairman, there should be everything amendment to Senate File 1790. Excuse me, it's not 1790, it's 1628. I'm sorry. That was the House file number I was reading. Is there an amendment?
This one?
I don't have.
A1.
I'd like to move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chairman, to put the bill in shape with which we should be discussing it.
Senator Scheid moves that we adopt the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Scheid.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This bill arises out of, I think that we knew about electronic licensing. The department implemented a technology system, but it's not interdepartmental. It's from an outside provider, an outside vendor. And what has happened is that, for example, in real estate licensing and continuing education requirements, people are able to do that electronically, but they were receiving a bill from the vendor for that transaction. And the real estate industry, and I think other people who are affected by the licensing, would just as soon not have to pay that bill separately. They'd like to see the Department of Commerce pay that, and they were willing to fund it at their own expense, their own personal expense, by, as you can see on line 1.12, it's a surcharge on their licensing origination and renewal fee. So it's a surcharge to the individual realtors, real estate salespersons, brokers, I assume, and other licensees, people who are licensed by the Department of Commerce. I would like to, I think insurance agents are the other obvious one. And appraisers. Okay, thank you. And we have, those are all covered in the in the delete everything. And if I might ask, I'm going to also move, I probably should have done this before I moved the entire A1 amendment, but everything, but I would like to change $30 to $40. It's going to say shall, if you look on line 1.12, line 2.18, and line 3.18. That 112 is real estate salesperson's line. 218 is insurance agents. And on page 3, 318, that section dealing with appraisers. Excuse me, we found another one up on page 3, line 5.
Okay.
And this is actually the real estate salespeople.
Senator Scheid, for the record, just let them know that there is a quorum present. And would you like to move that?
I'd like to change $30 to $40 in the four places that we see it.
Mr. Chair,
where we're sitting, that's a fee that's been negotiated with the department and affected professions.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know how much that raises? How much additional money?
Senator Scheid or
Chairman Senator Johnson, I don't know.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scheid, while you're finding that out, could I ask in line 1.7 what the word purposes is intended to mean?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, can Ms.
Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator. I believe that the intent there is in addition to the continuing education provisions, if we want to transfer a license or if we want to change our name or our address or anything of that nature, that is going to be handled electronically as well. And so that is what is intended to mean, so for other licensing purposes.
Thank you, Ms. Diari. Mr. Nelson, do you have something you'd like to add?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Patrick Nelson, Deputy Commissioner with the Commerce Department. In answer to the Senator's question, we're still trying to figure out what the total amount raised is. The part of the delete all did take some license types out of the bill, and as you note, the language there says up to, and the intent here is to only charge what is needed to pay the bills from the vendors. I think our rough estimate for $40 is about $3 million, but we would only charge what's required to affect the purposes of the bill.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Do members understand Senator Scheid's oral amendment to change 30 to 40 in those four locations?
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Yes, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, to Senator Johnson, this isn't to raise money for the department. This is going to the vendor, and it's up to this amount, so it may not be $40.
On Senator Scheid's oral amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The oral amendment is adopted. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, then Ms. Diori may want to say a few things if members
Welcome
understand.
To the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, my name is Susan Diori, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors. We just would ask for your support in this legislation. The Commerce Department has already initiated the technology with this outside vendor. And in its current form, as Senator Scheid mentioned, we would be paying on a per transaction basis for everything that we do. So, for example, if we take a continuing education course, which we have to do 30 hours in 2 years, for each and every hour they want to put on a surcharge for that. If we want to change our name or we want to transfer a license, for each one of those things, there would be a surcharge by this particular vendor. And so we're asking for this this different form of paying for this technology. We certainly have requested the technology and are happy to pay for what's needed here. We just think that this method would be more accountable to all of those professions who are in this bill who need to pay for this particular technology.
Thank you. Any
Mr.
questions
Mayor,
from
any,
members? Senator Scheid?
Sorry. I don't know if there's anybody else who wants to testify on that part. I do have another amendment that I would like to offer, but it's not related directly to this language.
The pizza guy, Domino.
Mr. Chairman, you can speak to both, but I do want to offer the A3 amendment.
Senator Scheid has offered the A3 amendment. It's coming around, members. The amendment, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, members will remember Senator Berglund's bill last year having to do with a partnerships created for the purpose of long-term care products, and this committee asked that legislation. There are some federal requirements having to do with training of persons who sell these partnership products, and I'll let Mr. Sposetto describe that kind of product, but we do need to get ourselves up to speed in terms of the federal requirement concerning education and licensing. And so that's what this amendment speaks to, and I would ask Mr. Sposetto to elaborate.
Mr. Sposetto, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dominic Sposetto. I'm here representing the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, and we are in support of this piece of legislation before you, both the technology fee and then the language related to the continuing education for long-term care partnerships. The long-term care partnership is a new product that will be available hopefully soon in Minnesota, whereby the public DHS works with private entities who purchase long-term care insurance, and if you use your long-term care insurance and exhaust the benefits of that policy, then you have the ability to disregard those assets when you have to spend down to qualify for our Medicaid program. So it's a way of enticing people to take personal responsibility for their long-term care insurance. It's also a way for them to set aside assets that are protected if they happen to go into a nursing home for a very extended period of time. And we think it's a good idea both for individuals purchasing long-term care insurance and for the state as well, saving money on Medicaid. This particular piece of legislation relates to training and education of agents that will sell this product. Since this is somewhat different than the current long-term care insurance product because of that partnership with Medicaid, we want to have agents trained and educated on both long-term care and Medicaid issues. This would require them to take 8 hours of initial training on long-term care insurance and Medicaid-related issues, and then every licensing cycle after that to complete 4 hours of continuing education. And during an agent's licensing cycle, they will take up to 30 hours of education. This will take effect January 1st, so it will give us an opportunity to develop the courses and present it to the agent community hopefully this fall, and we're hopeful that we'll also have long-term care insurance products available very shortly. I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sposetto. Senator Metzen.
I think anything we can do as a society and as a state to encourage people to understand and to purchase long-term health products is good. And obviously, if the state, and I think that's what part of this is, to train and get people to understand what they're buying. And if this, if they didn't have it personally, the state will be picking up $45,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year payments for that staying at the home. So this is a good. One other issue, and it's not for discussion today, but I think you get a real light $100 a year tax credit if you purchase long-term health care. And someday, somehow, we've got to get that up. It'll give somebody like $500. If you're paying $4,000 or $5,000 a year to hopefully, well, first of all, take care of yourself, but don't have the burden go to the state at that $50,000, $60,000. Don't we want to find more ways to get this product out there? And that's a different day, but that's a tax issue. But it seems to me that would be another plus in this long-term area, if that makes sense, to give more. Have you thought about that or your industry? And I know, Mr. Chairman, it's a little off what we're doing here, but Mr. what do Chairman, other states do? Why can't we make that credit higher? And I don't know what the cost would be, but I do know the savings at the other end would be tremendous.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, I agree with you. We are in the process of working with legislators to try and raise that tax credit, which is currently $100.
Which is nothing.
To up to $500. And the tax credit actually is only pays up to $500 or a quarter of your premium. So there is a cap on that based on, and we figure the average premium is about $2,000 a year. Therefore, the $500 tax credit would fit just about right. That is some discussions that's going on in the Tax Committee. In fact, there was a bill that was heard in the House Tax Committee this morning on that very issue, and we hope that that dialogue will continue.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to hear that that's moving somewhere, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Am I correct in assuming that these are for-profit products that are being sold for long-term care?
Mr. Spizzetto?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, it could be a for-profit, could be a not-for-profit mutual insurance company. It would be what you would consider a private insurer.
Okay. Mr. Senator Chair, Olson? Mr. Spizzetto, I would be very concerned or I would like to see a lot of transparency with these products, especially because they're marketed to a maybe more than normally vulnerable population, so that they would understand, just like we do with life insurance products, what the cost versus what the potential benefit is likely to be. And I would also like to know, as we look at these products actuarially, I mean, what degree of profit, what is the percentage of administrative cost, so that we can judge whether these are products that are treating our senior population fairly, or whether they're products that tend to be very profitable for the companies engaged in offering them.
Mr. Spizzetto, or Senator Shine?
Mr. Chairman, I might say this legislation, this amendment, doesn't authorize these products. We've done that.
Right.
Senator Berglund's bill last year, and it actually seemed, I think, like a very good idea to the members then, because it has to do with, as Ms. Zetto said, protecting certain assets. I think it's different than what we were starting to see come out on the market for products. So, but this has to do with the training, which is certainly part of the transparency and the consumer information that we want to be available to people. So I think the training and licensing is really important.
Thank you. Further discussion? If not, Senator Scheid renews her motion on the A3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that Senate File 1628 as amended to be recommended to pass.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Scheid moves that Senate File 1628 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to.
Go to finance because of the fee?
Does it have to go to finance, Senator Scheid, because of the fee?
I don't know. I assume that because it's raising.
I think it does.
I mean, it's implementing a fee.
Okay.
It probably does.
Probably should go to finance.
Yeah, I think.
Go to finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Bill is passed. Thank you, Senator Scheid.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sparks, then. So, excuse me, Senate File 744. Another issue that's been in front of the committee, but probably only Senator Madison, Senator Sparks, and myself have heard it before.
I'll look at it.
Since we're the only ones who have been on the committee before. And Senator Sparks, you have a delete everything amendment. Would you like
Senator
to
Senator, yes, I do. I do have the A2 delete all amendments.
And this would put the bill.
It would put the bill in the shape that we like it. The stakeholders have come to an agreement, and this would be the bill that I'd like to move forward today.
Okay. Senator Sparks moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion? Do members have it?
Not yet.
But at least everybody's entitled to one of these delete everything amendments. But I like people to see it. Yeah, and that is what we do. We put the bill in the shape the author would like it. It doesn't make sense not to, really. So, on the A2 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. And A2 amendment is adopted. Now, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And for those of you that were around last year, this is a bill that we heard a lot of testimony on and we passed. I appreciate the stakeholders that coming together. And this lead all amendment is a work that was created by that. Senate File 744 provides that a driver's personal automobile insurance policy would supply the primary liability coverage for any accident involving the driver and the rental vehicle. The rental car company would supply secondary coverage. What the bill does, Madam Chair and members, is shifts consumer responsibility and costs to parties who cause accidents, maintains injured party protections, creates continuity among businesses, and creates uniformity among states. With that, Madam Chair, with me today is Kevin Cooper, the General Manager and Vice President from Enterprise Rent-A-Car, and he can explain the bill in more detail.
Mr. Cooper, welcome to our committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, my name is Kevin Cooper. I'm the General Manager with Enterprise Rent-A-Car here in Minnesota. And as Senator Sparks mentioned, we did pass this through committee last year, something that we've been working a long time on, and we've reached an agreement with the Insurance Federation this year. And what it does is it really brings equity within our industry as it eliminates special carve-outs. It does put us more in line with the other states, and it's good for consumers who certainly rent cars. And I appreciate not only the time to speak with you today, but also your support on this bill.
Any questions for Mr. Cooper and our members? Then, Mr. Kavanaugh, did you wish to speak?
Madam Chairperson, it's a pleasure to be with the members today. I concur with Mr. Cooper that this is a good bill, and we appreciate a yes vote on it.
Are there any questions? Yes, Senator Prettner-Solin.
Madam Chair, Senator Sparks, I need more clarification. So what you're saying is that when I go rent a car in Texas, that I still purchase insurance on the vehicle, but my insurance will be covering the vehicle?
Senator Sparks, or Mr. Cooper, did you want to?
Madam Chair, members, yes. What this does actually is if you were to rent a car in Texas, you can either go through your own insurance or you can purchase the insurance with the insurance company. I mean, for the rental car company, rather. As it is right now in the state of Minnesota, even though you have your own insurance and you decline our protection, it still goes against the rental car company's liability. So that's why we're very unique in that sense. The bottom line is, when you rent a vehicle, you either choose to go through your own insurance or you choose to buy the rental car company's protection. And this is what this does, is fall that in line. Right now in the state of Minnesota, if you don't purchase it, the rental car companies still have to step up primarily instead of the secondary position.
Okay, I understand.
Senator Scogin.
I think you just answered it, but for clarification, no matter who buys insurance in Minnesota, you're held as the primary carrier.
Is that correct? Sure, members, that is correct, sir, yes.
And this would change that.
Senator Scogin, that's correct. This would make the lessee's insurance coverage would be primary.
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify
that
the question was, if they purchase protection through a rental car company, that's always going to be primary because they're purchasing that supplementally. But if they choose not to purchase it and they have their insurance and they get into an accident, their insurance would cover them. It's very common sense, but in the state of Minnesota, we have it right now where even if they decline the rental car company's insurance or protections, it still goes against the rental car company first. And that's why we're here today.
Well, because, Mr. Cooper, I think it's correct that Minnesota law requires that our auto insurance cover us when we rent an automobile. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And sir, I'm assuming that if we enact this legislation that the risk of your insurance carrier will be substantially diminished. Have they discussed with you the likelihood then that your policy premiums would probably likewise go down and maybe have lower cost of rental vehicles in the state as well? I mean, is that likely to follow from this?
Mr. Cooper.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. Yes, in fact, it depends on the rental car company. Some of us are self-insured. Certainly the bigger in companies like Enterprise Rent-A-Car, Mr. Luke Ebnett, who's a local operator, has to purchase out for insurance, so he has to pay for premiums. Those will certainly go down as a result of this, as will our reserves, because this is an undue expense for us. in our industry, it's a very competitive industry, and price being the biggest point of competition, it certainly allows for us to be very competitive, even more so on price, because it lowers our operating expense. So in all likelihood, yes, there'll be more competition on that price point because it'll lower our expense of operating.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Prentice-Sullen.
Yeah, Madam Chair, one more question. Why was it done the other way? What was the advantage there? And why do some states still have it? Where?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Kavanaugh.
Senator Solon, actually this came from a 1998 ruling by the Supreme Court. It was a strict application of the statute where it says that the owner of a vehicle has to provide the primary coverage. That's not a legislative – it was never done legislatively. It was never ruled as on the floor of the Senate or on the floor of the House and signed into law. It was a strict statutory reading of the law.
But, Madam Chair –
Senator Prentice-Sullen.
Mr. Kavanaugh. There are still several states, or a handful anyways, where they remain primary. Is that true in all those states?
I can't talk to,
Mr.
or
Kavanaugh.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, Senator Solon, I can't talk to all states. I know that Virginia had a very similar circumstance as Minnesota did. That's the only one that I know of. I haven't looked into the rest of the states.
Okay. Mr. Cooper, did you want to add something?
Madam Chair, only that I don't know. Obviously, my slice of heaven here is here in Minnesota, and I know that it's something that is very important to our industry, so I'd imagine that there's probably movement to try to get that in line with the rest of the states as well, but I can't really speak to those other states.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, did you wish to testify? No. Because there was a concern, but I think that you'll agree that the amendment takes care of the notification being done separately. Is that correct? Was that the issue?
Madam Chair, and I certainly want to speak for Mr. Johnson,
yes, Senator
but
Sparks.
He did come to some kind of an agreement, and that's exactly what his amendment did. I think that gives him some comfort.
So are there any other questions or discussion from members? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this bill, for it or against it? Anybody? No, I don't see anybody. Senator Sparks?
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 744 as amended, recommended to pass. I ask counsel, I think this can go to the floor. But
I think so, yes. Mr. Stang agrees. Okay, on the Sparks motion that Senate File 744 as amended be recommended to pass. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and gentlemen, thank you very much. Senator Higgins.
Oh, we are doing it.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I have Senate File 16.
Yes.
As you know, we have spent a lot of time talking this legislative session about affordable health care insurance and accessibility to that affordable insurance. But as we've been talking, it occurs to us that one of the biggest groups of uninsured people is young adults. Current law provides that dependent children can be covered by their parents' policy if they are full-time students up to age 25. This bill would drop the reference to full-time students. It would allow dependent young people to have continuity of coverage until they're on their own, and it addresses a variety of problems that create gaps in coverage and administrative headaches for health plans. A periodic part-time load is not any longer unusual. Students pursue their degrees. Often an internship is key to getting a job. Most often those internships aren't full-time. They're just for a few credits. And also, given high tuition costs, if classes needed for a certain degree track are full, some students may take a lighter load one quarter rather than go and take something outside of their degree track. In addition, if students experience a health problem, if they get mono, which is really common when they're in college, they break a leg, maybe they have some mental health issues that come up, they may no longer be able to carry a full load. But then what happens? They lose their health insurance. Health plans have told us that they have a lot of administrative costs and headaches related to verifying the current requirements. One plan sends out more than 4,000 notices to verify that the young people are carrying a full-time class load. Health costs, I think, should go to care, not to sending out cards to verify whether a student's taking the right number of credits. I have with me today a couple of people who can tell us more about the problem and lend their support. I think Mr. Spazzetto will start.
Mr. Spazzetto.
Madam Chairman, it's great to be back.
Yes, right.
Dominic Spazzetto, I'm representing the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors who support this legislation. As Senator Higgins says, the largest portion of uninsured in Minnesota are in this age category, and this would be a nice way to provide insurance coverage. The current problem is that it's tied strictly to a full-time student load, which no longer seems to work very well. I speak from personal experience where I have two daughters in school. One daughter has taken the normal track of 12 hours during the spring semester and taken the summer off to come home and hang out and do her laundry. The other daughter has decided to go a different route and taken 9 hours in the first semester and 6 hours in summer school. And the end result is that she has 15 hours compared to my other daughter's 12 hours, but because she wasn't a full-time student, we had to drop her insurance coverage and then sign up again in the summer. It's just it's a nuisance, and the recent statistics that I have seen from the University of Madison, Wisconsin, said that only 38% of the students complete their degree in 4 years. So there's a whole slug of students out there that are going 5 and sometimes 6 years, and it's kind of ridiculous to expect that they carry a full load at all times in order just to maintain their health insurance. So we think this is a good piece of legislation and something you should consider.
Thank you. Mr. Griffin?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Phil Griffin. I represent Preferred One as a lobbyist, but I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans in support of Senate File 816. We appreciate the opportunity to express the sentiments that Senator Higgins already told you about in terms of the administrative expenses and costs and the problems that Mr. Spazzetto has described in terms of the personal hassle factor that comes into this for parents and students. I don't think I can add much more to the testimony. I would like to be able to say that this will lower administrative costs enough that it might impact premiums, but we can't say that. But we do think that this helps to address a problem. And as I said to a committee last night dealing with another bill, there are some things that we're doing here that aren't going to help health care costs or help more people get coverage. This is one bill that we can say will help.
Senator Prettner-Sullen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Griffin, if this is such a good deal, how come the health plans haven't already done it on their own?
I don't know.
Madam Chair, because state law, as I read it, Senator Prettner-Sullen prohibits us from doing it.
Okay. Is that and so, Madam Chair, the repealer then will enable this?
Madam Chair, Senator, that is my understanding, yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, I appreciate that. And I certainly support this legislation. I just was not sure what the barriers were before.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a floor in the bill?
Is there a what?
Bottom level.
Yes. Age 25.
Is there a credit level?
Oh, good. Senator Higgins, is there a minimum credit?
Yeah.
I think that that's what we're...
Credits?
In current law, there is, and that's...
Full-time is, I think, Madam Chair, full-time is considered to be 12 hours, I believe, during a semester.
Right. Madam Chair, but yes, I'm wondering if they take no credits at all but stay enrolled, is it covered?
Madam Chairman, is this drafted? They wouldn't even need to be a student.
Right.
All they have to do is be 25 years old and be a dependent.
Yeah. So, Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, if they were a young person who had another job and so they were no longer a dependent, but that other job didn't offer health insurance, this wouldn't cover that. So they have to be they would have to be under age 25 and a dependent. So not on their own in terms of a salary of their own.
I might add, Madam Chair, that it's not unusual for young children to be back in the home, even though they are employed, and often they're employed in an entry level position that doesn't have health insurance. So this would be a mechanism for them to stay on their parents' group coverage and maintain insurance.
Senator Johnson.
And Madam Chair, is there a way to make this so if they get employed but then they don't get employed, they can go back on instead of having, or is that the way it works?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, Phil Griffin again. If they move back and forth between dependent status and non-dependent status, yes, they could move back and forth to the policy as the need fits. Our goal, of course, is to sell more insurance. It wouldn't surprise you to see that we are interested in making sure that more people are covered. And the goal here is to try and prevent those gaps that we see regularly, as Mr. Spazzetto described them, of students who sometimes are a student, sometimes aren't a student, and as a result lose that insured status.
Madam Chair, Johnson.
How would this affect COBRA? Kids that are on COBRA, if they go off of it, can they get back on COBRA, or won't it affect that?
Madam Chairman, I think this would keep them off COBRA.
Okay, exactly.
So they would stay on the group coverage and not have to exercise their COBRA extension.
Yeah.
What happens now if
Senator Olson?
During the summer
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, I would just also like to say from firsthand experience how much my family personally would have benefited from this legislation, having children right now between the ages of 20 and 31, and a college that where the tuition has doubled in the last 6 years. There are many of my children's friends who have had to go leave college completely for periods of time to be able to work to save the money to get back in to pay their tuition again. My son has also is in the Guards and has been deployed from time to time, and then when he comes back, it's a while before he can re-enroll because those times don't line up with semesters, and then he doesn't have coverage again for a while. There are lots of circumstances that younger people go through where they don't have, or they're in jobs that aren't likely to offer coverage. And this isn't requiring parents to put their children on their policies. It's just giving them that option, I think.
Madam Chair, Senator
Mr.
Olson, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the days have changed in the 30 years since I entered the workforce when you went through in 4 years for the majority of us and came out and got a job with benefits. That is not necessarily the case these days.
Members. Yes, Senator Scogin.
Madam Chair, where would you like this to go?
This can go. This would go right to the floor. And I would like very much for it to go to the floor.
Well, I'd move Senate File 816 to be recommended to pass and head to the floor.
Okay. Senator Scogin moves Senate File 816 be recommended to pass. We didn't have an amendment. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to the bill? Anybody that would like to speak for or against it? I see none. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you,
Madam Chair, members
and gentlemen. And members, I just want to tell you that on Thursday we are going to have, I believe Senator Torres Ray will be back with the amino-based acid formula issue. I honestly don't have an update on that yet, but I think that I know that they're working on that. I will have a small, very technical bill that's kind of modernization.
It is.
It's a long description for, but it's very technical. And that's the truth. And then Senate File 1333, Senator Latz's car buyer's bill of rights. 1464, Senator Scogin's motor vehicle airbag repair and replacement requirement. And then Senator Higgins will have two bills here, the Jarnell Brown Act, which is Senate File 1441, and 1262, which has to do with lead jewelry. And so it looks like it's a long agenda. I can't tell you, I really would appreciate if people would be here at 12:30. It will help us enormously. Okay.
Yeah, Marty.
So, and if you're on Senator Metzen's committee, he'd like
same
to say
thing too, yeah.
The meeting's adjourned. Thank you.